In the mid-50s, two men knocked over a kerosene stove during a fight at a concert. After fleeing the blaze, the guitar player realized he left his beloved Gibson inside. B.B. King then ran in and saved it. He later learned that the fight was over a woman named Lucille, and ever since, his guitars have borne that name. You can find Lucille at the Hard Rock in Hollywood, Florida. Thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history can be found at Hard Rock cafes, casinos, and hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com.
Little Steven's Underground Garage's Coolest Conversations, presented by Hard Rock Cafe, hosted by the Mighty Manfred.
This is the Mighty Manfred, and it's time to get started with today's Coolest Conversations podcast, presented by Hard Rock and Little Steven's Underground Garage. Thanks for listening, and please remember to follow and subscribe, rate, and review. My guest for today's chat is UK producer Dave Draper. He's a close associate of Ryan Hamilton's and has produced Ryan's albums The Devil's in the Details, This is the Sound, and the upcoming Nowhere to Go But Everywhere, due out September the 18th on Wicked Cool Records. This one features Ryan again backed by the Harlequin Ghosts. And it's from said album we have our recent coolest song in the world, Jesus and John Lennon. Let's hear some of that now, followed by my interview with Dave Draper as your Coolest Conversations podcast, presented by Hard Rock and Little Steven's Underground Garage. Na, 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 na,
na, na. She goes to church on Sunday morning to cleanse her soul of Saturday. She could have listened to all those warnings and all that praying ain't gonna save her life. Just like Jesus and John Lennon, a beautiful beginning, but it's all gonna fall apart.
Coolest Conversations time at Little Steven's Underground Garage, and this is the Mighty Manfred. With my guest today, producer, engineer, and musician Dave Draper, best known to us here in the Underground Garage as Ryan Hamilton's producer, both with the Traitors and the Harlequin Ghosts. How are you doing, Dave?
I'm doing very well. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right, doing pretty good. Excited to be chatting with you. You've done a lot of great work with Ryan and the guys. Where are you right now in the UK?
I'm in a little village called Drake's Broughton, which is just below Birmingham. So it's right in the middle, and it's lovely and drizzly.
Well, have you, your family and friends managed to stay healthy these past few months?
Oh, thank you for asking. Yes, everyone's safe and sound. It has affected a few people in close circles, but everyone seems to have recovered. But it's very scary, very real, and you know, it's times like this where, you know, creative things become even more important. It's a lovely thing to be able, during lockdown, during quarantine, to be able to create as much as we have been. It really makes you account for what you have.
Absolutely. Now, we are fans of early UK rock and roller Cliff Richard here in the Underground Garage.
Yeah.
Certainly his debut single, Move It, killer tune. And I also love the fact that his backing band eventually became The Shadows. Tell me how important Cliff Richard is to your early music development.
Oh, extremely, extremely important. My parents had a pretty good vinyl collection, which we could just access at our own, want. And me and my brother and my sister, we all had ones that we would go to. But Cliff Richard was there was a record called Private Collection. I think it was 1977 to 1987. Uh-huh. And I obsessed over it. And some would say that was a guilty pleasure, and I'm more than happy to say I don't care. I think it's fantastic. So it really, really got me into a good sense of the late 70s pop, and I think it really helped shape what I have become today. I mean, you lean on all the things that you're influenced by, and it's very important. Yes.
Right. Well, so you were at an early age, you were listening to that. I mean, were you listening to music in a different way than maybe your siblings were? I mean, when you were listening to Cliff Richards, was it just, I like the way he sings, or was it, listen to what the guitar is doing, listen to what these other things are.
Exactly that. It was. I had no idea, obviously, what those things were. I had no idea that, you know, that there was layers to it. You just accepted that when you hear a song, that it's just, you know, a song. You don't think about the layers when you're not a musician or anything. It's just a piece of art. You know, when you look at a painting, you don't think about brush strokes or, you know. But I remember hearing things in there, in the music, that I would point out to my brother or say mum and dad, and they wouldn't have a clue what I was pointing out, and I had no idea. I had no idea what I was pointing out. I just knew there were other things inside there that made me feel a certain way. And it was a very long time until I actually picked picked up the guitar and started playing. So it was always, you know, it was almost like it was tapping me on the shoulder from a very early age of like, you know, you can, you know, you get this. This works for you. So I was kind of on my own with it, but I definitely knew there was something else going on inside there that made my brain and my heart, you know, sync up, and it was amazing.
So you mentioned, there being a number of years between that and you're picking up a guitar. When did you actually pick up a guitar?
So I picked up a guitar for the first time, literally out of brotherly competition. When I was 14, he had a guitar because one of his best friends played it at school, and then he wanted to do it. And then a little bit out of competition, I just decided that I'd learn to play it just to be better than him. And that was the only reason I started.
So you started playing some music. I imagine you guys fell in together as playing in a band, or did you actually play with your brother?
We played, yes. At the beginning, I'd say, it was very much like, you know, oh, I could do this too kind of thing. And then we ended up getting a Nirvana tab book and we'd learn it together. And then he fell away from it and it became more of a hobby. But I became completely obsessed and then took it to school during break times just to carry on learning. And then other people at school would be like, oh, you play? No, I've got a little band. Do you want to join? A little do some covers at lunchtime and stuff. It just fell into place, but not for trying it. It was just very, very natural.
When did this, when did that translate into engineering and producing? What was this? Did you have an epiphany kind of moment? Like, oh, wait a minute, this is what I really want to be doing. Or how did that sort of morph?
It was the guy who asked me to join his covers band was very spoiled by his parents. They bought him everything, and he never appreciated any of it. But to my advantage, every new toy that he had, in this case, it was a Fostex 4-track cassette recorder, and he just got tired of it really quick. And I decided that, well, that's pretty cool that you can, you know, you can record one thing on that track and one thing on this track and one thing. Oh, okay, well, I'll have it. And I went out and I bought a scratch card for the lottery, and I've never done one before, and I won £100 on it. And I just said, I'll exchange you the £100 scratch card for the Fostex 4-track. And he was like, that's okay, you can have it. I'm getting an 8-track next week. So I ended up having this 4-track just because someone, you know, didn't appreciate what they had. But that was the moment. That was definitely the turning point in my life.
How did you, so you had this 4-track and you started recording, I guess, your own band or local bands? Or
The 4-track was just recording ourselves.
Yeah.
And then I joined another band and recorded that. And then I got an 8-track, which was like, oh my, you can do eight things now. Wow, my God, it's crazy. So that became the obsession. And then I started writing loads of music on my own just to be able to, you know, experiment with layers. I didn't actually fall into recording people as a profession until maybe like 5 years later, when computers started to be able to, you know, affordable computers to record from, that you could put in the boot of your car and drive to a rehearsal room and record a band that you'd seen at a club and said, oh, I really like them. I'll go and record their rehearsal for free. And that's kind of how it started with the networking. It's just, oh, I really like you guys. I can do a bit of recording. I'll help you if you help me, and see how we get on. And I did, that was mainly how it all kind of snowballed into where it is now.
So when you're recording, are you using Pro Tools, or do you have any kind of analog equipment?
I used to be all analog. When I moved into I'm going to go and get professionally recorded. I'm not going to record myself anymore. I'm going to go to a studio. There, you know, it's going to be a different world, and I'll see whether it's a world that I want to go into at that level. And I just fell in love with all of the equipment. You know, when you walk into a studio, it's like eye candy, isn't it? And then they're just like, oh, this is amazing. But the guy at the studio was a Cubase user. So there was, you know, at the time there was a very early version of Pro Tools, Cubase, and I think a primitive version of Logic as well. And there were various other ones, but those were like the three big ones. So as he had Cubase, I moved on to Cubase, which then became Nuendo, which is the bigger brother of Cubase, which you can do all the post-production stuff for movies on. So I've decided to stay in that lane, and you know, it's second language now. But now I'm all about technology and just making it as small as possible. You know, if I can pick it up in both hands and record a band, I think it's fantastic. I've been very, very lucky to be able to, you know, want to adapt. Because it means that at times like this, especially when you can't see people in a studio, right, you can fire up your laptop and do it from the comfort of your sofa.
Matt, how did you come across Ryan Hamilton? How did you guys meet?
I met Ryan through a guy called Ginger Wildheart. Ginger Wildheart is my favorite singer-songwriter of all time, and I was working with Ginger, and he said, you should come and see us on this tour. Check out Ryan Hamilton and the Traitors. You should come and have a look. And then I think it was Ginger that said to Ryan, you should work with Dave Draper in some degree. So when I came to the gig and I met Ryan, we were already talking about mixing the album that Ryan was about to work on with the guy. So it's very a matter of, oh, you should work with him. Oh, you should work with him. Let's put you two together. And it was when I met Ryan at the show and the band, I knew it was instantly going to work.
So Ginger was kind of your matchmaker for you guys.
That's correct. Yes, yes.
So we know Ginger Wildheart here in the Underground Garage through the song that he did with Ryan Hamilton, the what we call the FU Brain.
Yeah.
So had you must have heard that song before you saw those guys playing together?
No, I produced that song.
Oh, terrific.
That was after the first time that I worked. Ryan asked me if I would mix an album that he did called Devils in the Detail. I then got a call after the tour saying that they basically fired the producer and asked me if I would do the whole thing. So after that record was complete, Ginger guested on some of the songs, and then the guys obviously got talking about doing the FU Brain song. So Ginger just came down to my studio, and we did everything in a day, sent it to Ryan. He did his stuff the same day. Mm-hmm. Sent it back, and I think we had it all mixed and mastered within 5 days of it being started, and it turned out absolutely amazing.
Yeah, that's been a favorite. We played quite a bit, and the proceeds there were to charity, mental health charity. I can't recall the charity offhand, or I would say it right now.
Yes, yes, it was for the Samaritans, which I know was very close to Ryan and Ginger's vision with the song.
Well, let's move on and talk about the upcoming album, Nowhere to Go But Everywhere. It's due out September the 18th on Wicked Cool Records, new album from Ryan Hamilton and the Harlequin Ghosts. When did you guys record that?
We recorded some demos at the end of last year, then some of those demos translated into actually being part of the record. So I'd say that it started the end of last year. So actually, I think the demo started, I think there was a few random demos that me and Ryan were working on back in the summer of last year. But the actual, let's record this properly, was in, I think it started in January or February. I can't remember with this whole COVID thing. It's kind of blurred by the first half of this year. But it definitely started this year, yeah.
All right. So, oh my gosh. So there are 11 tracks on the album. You did it at one session earlier this year in January or February. Is that right?
We did the drums. Yes, that's correct. Yeah, we did. Ryan came over when he was on the tour. And then he did all of his vocals, and we there was a few songs that needed to be finished, the writing of, so we did some co-writing and just to fill in the blanks and everything. And then those recordings went on to the label just to check everything out. And Stephen Van Zandt had some, you know, some arrangement ideas and stuff. And then once we got those all signed off, we jumped straight into doing the drums and the bass within a week of each other. Literally the quarantine was coming. So we tried to get all the recording done, and anything else that we needed to do, we could do remotely. And we finished it just at the start of quarantine. I mean, the wonders of technology, if we hadn't had the internet or anything, we probably wouldn't have been able to finish it. It was a blessing, you know, that the internet is there for us. It certainly made the record be handed in on time, which was an absolute relief.
Right. In fact, that relates back to what you were mentioning earlier about, you know, the advancement of technology and
yeah. Being able to say to Ryan, you know, there's some harmonies that need to happen, and you know, there's a guitar part that needs, you know, can you just, you know, do it? And he'd just sit at home and set his little studio up, do the missing parts, send it over, I'd fly it in, add some stuff here. The funny thing is we've laughed about it a few times, me and Ryan, is, you know, what we would consider the best thing that we've done as a team was done in finished in quarantine in my spare bedroom studio. It's just really funny. It's so cool that, you know, that's even possible. But it was a wonderful process, absolutely painless.
Well, our coolest song in the world this week is Jesus and John Lennon. It's off the upcoming release. You mentioned Stephen having some arrangement ideas. He's actually listed as the songwriter along with Ryan on that track. Are you privy to any of the work they did together in crafting it?
Well, yes. Ryan worked in a couple of ways. He'll either send a complete song, or he'll just send a section of a song, or I've got this chorus idea, and the same for me. Hey, I've got these chords. What do you think of this? Does this inspire you? And blah, blah, blah. Jesus and John Lennon, he delivered as a complete, like, package. Here it is as a demo. What do you think? I thought it was great. So I did a more advanced demo for them to everyone to listen to and stuff. But where me and Ryan thought it was completed, Stephen heard something more in it, which was the big gang vocal section in the middle. And he sends these amazing like ideas via just voice memos, and they are so invaluable. They help every single time, and I'm not just saying that because it sounds like something good to say. They're just insights where he just goes, guys, what do you think about this? This really struck me as this happening. And, you know, we're just like, that's it. How did we not see that? But sometimes it takes an outside party just to be able to point out the obvious. So Stephen suggested the whole section. So we put it in the song, readjusted the demo, sent it back, and he was happy. So he just slotted in an entire missing section that we couldn't see, you know, right in front of our face.
Very cool. So let me ask you about your own playing, because you are listed as playing, or credited as playing guitar on the track. I know you play guitar or keys, you know, on this particular track. Are you playing rhythm parts? What is your guitar on Jesus and John Lennon?
I've done some basic rhythm guitars around Ryan. So Ryan did an acoustic, I did an acoustic, so we could put one in the left, one in the right speaker, just to have the left and right bounce of two players. And then I did all of the extra
electric guitars, which we tried to keep to a minimum, with Ryan having almost a vision of like, I need to make this type of record next time. This is where I need to be heading. I'm going through some stuff, and this has become clear to me. I need to face in this direction. So we thought that we'd, you know, keep the electric guitars only down to, you know, hooks and, mm-hmm. and melody lines and stuff, just to keep the acoustic guitars right up front. And the good thing about having, you know, myself and Ryan playing in left and right, it gives the whole record a real, like, bouncy feeling that it's not just one person doing it, where it might be a little sterile.
Yeah.
So we play off each other incredibly well, and that wasn't, you know, evident until the tracking started happening for the record. So this is working amazingly, much better than we ever thought. So yeah, I just added, you know, I just mirrored what he was doing, and then just added some candy on top.
So you're basically Ryan's George Martin here, right? That's kind of your role.
Just not as handsome. Yeah. Yeah. We've got a really. There's a real. It sounds a little cheesy to say, but we've got real kinship, and it's very easy to finish each other's sentences in a musical environment. We don't always see eye to eye, but that usually brings out the best in the other person that might have had a doubt about something. But we're a really good team, and that's come from a lot of practice, because we've made quite a few albums together, and I've got to say, I hope long may it continue.
Well, not too, speaking of an earlier record, not too long ago, you described yourself as turning a bit pink, as in tickled pink, after the last album, from Ryan Hamilton to Harlequin Ghosts. This is the Sound, won Album of the Year from the Independent Music Awards in the Indie Alt category. Has your natural complexion returned yet?
I'm always going to be a bit pasty because of the climate here, but that record is summer in a bottle for me. It really is. It's such a sunshine album, and it's so great that it's won the award, and it's had the reviews it's had, and I couldn't have been happier for everyone involved, and knowing that I'm a part of that machine is very pleasing, and it's certainly one that, you know, I'm not going to forget anytime soon.
Yeah, well, I know you've worked with lots of artists there in the UK. Is this your first award for a project that was released on this side of the Atlantic in the US?
That's absolutely correct, yes.
Well, congratulations. I know it's...
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
It's the first of many to come. You know, we'll get the...
I really hope so. I mean, you know, I'm going to empty the mantelpiece, and we can start stacking them up as they come in. But what a wonderful thing to have happened. If that's the only time, what a wonderful experience. Absolutely wonderful.
Well, so the upcoming album we mentioned is Nowhere to Go But Everywhere, and we can listen to one more track, have time for one more track, and I want us to hear Newcastle Charm. Is that based on any real life events that you know of?
Yes, it is. Yes, it's based on just an experience that Ryan... went through the end of last year, a pretty, you know, life-changing experience. So, you know, the saying, write what you know, certainly has never been, I think in Ryan's case, more on this album. The entire album is write what you know, it's from the heart. So everything that, you know, Ryan experienced the end of last year, and he went on a bit of a road trip and everything, he's just literally put all of that experience into this record, and that song in particular is very autobiographical of a, you know, of someone that you know has moved on from Ryan's life, but it's so for something that is a subject that is, you know, maybe a little dark and a little blue, that song has a real upbeat, fun thing to it. So the way that, you know, when Ryan presented the initial idea, here's this chord structure I've got, here's this verse and chorus. It was really clever, making something that wasn't a pleasant experience to sound like some big summer pop song. It's great, really great. I absolutely love that song.
Oh, me as well. By the way, how do you find the ladies from Newcastle versus elsewhere around the country?
Bolshy and to the point. very, very, very direct and very, say, you know, I say what I like and I like what I say.
So what are you playing on this track? Are you playing anything?
Yeah, same thing.
Okay.
Mirrored acoustic and then all of the electric guitars. And I'm doing piano, I think, on that one. Yes, that's right, because the middle goes into that big clap-along section. Electric guitar, acoustic guitar, and piano.
Dave, thank you so much for speaking with me today on our Coolest Conversations.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's been a real treat. Thank you.
You're certainly welcome. Let's give another track off the upcoming album, Nowhere to Go But Everywhere, a listen now. Here's Newcastle Charm from Ryan Hamilton and the Harlequin Ghosts in Little Steven's Underground Garage. Newcastle Charm. That's Ryan Hamilton and the Harlequin Ghosts here in Little Steven's Underground Garage. Track is off the upcoming album Nowhere to Go But Everywhere, due out on Wicked Cool Records September the 18th. This is the Mighty Manfred, and thanks again to Dave Draper, the band's producer, for speaking with me today on our Coolest Conversations. Thanks also to Olivia Callahan for producing our podcast. Dion Week here in the Underground Garage, celebrating the longtime rock and roller and his new album, Blues with Friends. And the man will be joining us to chat about it and his career. That's your next Coolest Conversations podcast, presented by Hard Rock and Little Steven's Underground Garage.
In the mid-50s, two men knocked over a kerosene stove during a fight at a concert. After fleeing the blaze, the guitar player realized he left his beloved Gibson inside. B.B. King then ran in and saved it. He later learned that the fight was over a woman named Lucille, and ever since, his guitars have borne that name. You can find Lucille at the Hard Rock in Hollywood, Florida. Thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history can be found at Hard Rock cafes, casinos, and hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com.